been through a lot of different teachings, Jeff, in your time. From what you talk about, it seems like you've just availed yourself of what took your fancy at the time, right?
Yeah, right. You do. you pursue what's to be exciting to you, right?
Yeah. Goes out, you can't bring it back.
Hopefully you go out with it.
I think expectations have a lot to do with that. Keep your expectations waiting for the next jolt, you know. You're disappointed when it doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
So, why be expected? You know?
You know, we talk confidently about things that happened before now, as if things happened before now.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that internally as well, right? If there's an expectation or something we're gravitating toward or avoiding or having a cathartic weeping release, you know, on a long drive, listening to something on tape. Seems like we're always committed to the process of becoming and the process of processing. Well, this is about this, and that's about that, and this is about this, and it's the reason this is about this is because of that. And this is the justification for it. This is the value, but that's not valuable, but this is valuable, but, you know, take what you can and leave the rest and do this, but, you know, stir away from that and go to Osho's ashram and, you know, when the feds come, make sure you're not there. So we tend to evaluate present experience through atmospheres of things that happened prior to now, or how we valued it, or what we got out of it, or what we didn't get out of it.
It's like oversimplification and storyboarding, but we can do that in the present moment too, like whatever that present, you know, it's like constant.
Well, we've got a brain. That's what the brain does.
Yes, you could say that. You could blame it on the brain or the bossa nova. Yeah.
The bossa nova? Is that what caused all this?
That's what's just been responsible this whole time.
I blame it on rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Or your own jazz.
That was...
Ooh.
You know, Osho had to have been powerfully influential or powerfully hypnotic to convey inspiration and permission and authority to create whatever it was created in Pune and then transferred that strange form of cooperation to thousands and thousands of people that permitted them to create a municipality that was larger and more vital than the, you know, the one that was incorporated by the, right, state. I mean, how do people, that many people, come together and agree on who's going to take out the garbage and who's going to do the plumbing and who's going to be on the repair and who's running the programs and who's building the facilities and who's bringing all the cash to the bank in town, and who's doing the public relations, and who's buying the guns and the silver, right? who's managing the behavioral and sexual mores of the community, if there were any. I mean, look what happened. Osho was strong enough, you could say influential enough, as a single persona to influence enough people according to, you know, his teachings or philosophy or whatever it was, to build a self-sustaining municipality that didn't have taxation, but it had money coming in from, right, people staying there or living there or taking programs there. So everybody was pooling. That's why it was so scary. I mean, forget about even the spiritual and the religious aspects of it, whether they were valuable, cathartic, transformative, or just sheer fun. He was strong enough, right, to create a huge, self-sustaining municipality. Have you seen this happen anywhere else before? I mean, whatever Jim Jones did was a relatively, right, small scale.
A few hundred.
Right? Or David Koresh was smaller than that, maybe.
This was like thousands, wasn't it?
And everyone was more or less voluntarily willing to cooperate with the, what would you call it? You know, the glue, the psychic cultural glue to hold the charge, to maintain that municipality.
I think it was the spiritual piece. I think it was because he was, I think he tapped into something that was like a, what Byron Katie taps into, or I think that's the kind of punch that you need for that.
Byron Katie might have enough. She might have enough charisma that if she told everyone we're moving to Nevada, they would go. Enough people would go, right, to create a self-sustaining municipality for a time.
You look at what she's created in terms of just the volume of people in her community through the internet presence. It's huge.
It's huge, right? Yeah.
But that, you know, her shtick hasn't been let's move to another location.
Yeah.
Let's all
right.
Tie in online.
Right.
She's
yeah. Go. Go virtual.
I was desperate enough last night. I actually thought about logging on and doing some facilitation.
Uh-huh.
Thought, nah, I'm not that bad.
Right.
I can still do it on the helpline if I want to.
People like they'll put queries and stuff like that out.
There's a helpline. There's a free helpline that if you're certified and are approved to staff it, you can just go on anytime.
No work today.
It publishes that you're there and people call it. I did that. It's a certain number of hours you have to do.
There's no potatoes down there.
And then to maintain your certification, you've got to do a certain number of hours.
No, I think it's. What is this? Just 7 days? Does it have bacon in it? Or?
No.
Oh, it's
bacon. It's interesting to look at
the charismatics.
Whose influence, spiritual or otherwise, affects so many people that it creates a culture, call it a cult or a culture, right, of agreement so that you can have an online community of that kind of coherence, or Amici, Ashram in Kerala, worldwide institution, Sai Baba. But Sai Baba's institution may, you know, be quickly declining because there's no longer the parental figure is no longer alive to either give boons or materialize things or hold your one's unruly consciousness in check by, right, orienting us to a belief system, coherent belief system. So you wonder, you know, what does Amici really do for people? I mean, she permits them to participate in what it looks like a voluntary, coherent belief system that creates a devotional, spiritual, religious, behavioral, moral structure, code, for how they conduct themselves and how they conduct themselves within the embrace of the community. And you know everyone is beating everybody up about, you know, I'm more Amici than you, right? And whatever that means. Because who runs the parking and the cooking and the cleaning of the kitchen and the supply order and then the meditation tools and who runs the music, right? And the recording and the PA system. And it's just like a little, you know, chaos of a Pebble Hill church. And that's what happens. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh is either dead or soon to be. He had a major stroke. I don't think he's functioning anymore as a leader, you know, of his worldwide institution, right? The order of interbeing, the international order of interbeing. Weird. That almost sounds like a...
I didn't know that was...
Oh, yeah.
Sounds too sci-fi.
I know, it sounds like a bunch of aliens.
Yeah. It's total Borg,
as opposed
yeah.
to interbeing.
And we don't know, you know, how well glued together the order of interbeing, Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village and all of the, you know, outposts will remain or sustain without the influence of, right, the founder and leader. We look at the Vedanta Society that's been around for a long, long time, you know, from the Ramakrishna order of monks and nuns. That's been around a long... That still exists.
What's that?
The Vedanta Society. That's based on the life and teachings of, you know, Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, and Sharada Devi, the Holy Mother. You know, you've got the Trinity.
Ooh.
Trinity going down Trinity. Again. Yeah. And there's a... And, you know, Indians are still really fond and plugged into the Vedanta Society and support it financially, right, in the temples and the mandirs and the places to go and the relics. You can go to the L.A. Vedanta Society around the birthday time of Ramakrishna and they will take out relics, you know, from the body of the master.
Hmm.
Yeah. But everyone gets really high. Worshipping teeth. Teeth and hair and bone chars and God knows what else, right? The vibration of the master persists today in boxes throughout the world, locked away, that are brought out on his birthday time or something, and you can get down with the relics.
Kind of like you and I in the freezer, Dave.
What did you say?
We saved our wedding cake. We
and you look at it, you see all of these, this urgency for, let's call it, repetitive, iterative organizing principle, which is belief and loyalty, purpose. Right? Yeah.
We're all looking for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's how these cathartic influencers get to where they are in terms of expressing a wave of what appears to be coherent belief systems, behavioral patterns, justifications, reasons for being, that are able to create institutions of all these kinds.
And
look at NBC and CBS and Fox.
And it's the confidence by which they express it. The absolute certainty that
yeah.
seems to really, I would say, become infectious.
You
know.
Can you get some veggies?
Yeah, I got some veggies.
Yeah. Part of it.
I mean, when you don't feel that surety in yourself and you see it somewhere else, you think, maybe I've kind of missed it.
Adolf Hitler was good at conveying confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
It was psychopathic, but confidence still.
Sure.
You've got to have a lot of confidence to pass that many people.
Jim Jones.
Yes. Well, let's just say you're a microcosm of this. right? Your own psyche or your own consciousness is a microcosm of what we can point at an institutional level. So how often in the day are we conscious of, or even unconscious of, characterizing our present experience through what appears to be a coherent structure, a coherent belief system of purpose and justification and preference and choice and outcome?
Just even thinking that you know anything about anything that's going on. Not the case. It's like, oh my God.
It's sort of an arbitrary grasping.
Maybe what we're seeing is consciousness on the move in what we call the human behavioral expressive meme is an arbitrary.
It's like the rungs of a ladder, you know. You got to make sure you're hanging on to one.
Yeah.
You don't want to let them all go at the same time, you know.
Yeah. Well, this addiction to framing your present experience through conscious or unconscious, voluntary or involuntary proliferation of orienting belief systems is samsara. And this is, you could say, the geometry of samsara. Before we get bemused by or troubled by suffering related to circumstances and events. So if we don't see or aren't willing to investigate this skeletal or the marrow of identification in the first place, then
it'll keep happening.
All we end up with is in the misery of symptoms.
Yeah. Regrets, blames, wants, hopes, fears. It's like,
right.
Oh.
So what we're playing with here is stepping back to see the geometry, the movement, the undulation of consciousness and identification, excuse me, of belief systems, orientation, loyalties, justifications, and the constant check marks that we're giving ourselves as to whether I'm living my life in accordance with, you know, my so-called preferences or not. And let's say I'm not, for a few minutes in a day, living according to my ultimate self-imposed preferences. Well, then I either might be joyful because I'm playing hooky for myself, or more likely I'm self-condemning.
Do you want just jelly or do you want cheese?
Because I'm playing hooky for
just
myself.
Yeah.
But we don't even know what myself is or means. And yet we have the capacity to compare idealized behavior or morality or shoulds, woulds, if onlys, to what appears to be actually happening, and then suffer the gap. So all of our, call it behavioral suffering, imagined suffering, could be seen as simply suffering the gap. What's the gap? The gap is between an idealized expectation of how I should be perceiving things, feeling things, experiencing things, as contrasted with how I am feeling things, perceiving things. And this contrast is absolutely imaginary.
So that's the suffering. So the suffering is not so much experiencing the savagery or the negative emotions.
No,
it's holding that in a certain framework with regard to
the gap,
the ideal.
It's the gap. the suffering
think we should be that we're not. It's the suffering.
Well, it's very subtle. It's that and all kinds of intricacies, many of which are even hard to articulate. Yeah, maybe impossible to articulate. Because the gap, what we're referring to as the gap, which is the spread between what may actually be occurring and what we hold out as ideally should be occurring, is immeasurable. It's not a simple gap. It's a complex, richly complex, moving
gap. Yeah, you can spend a whole lifetime trying to bridge it, and it never stays. Even if you bridge it for a little bit, it doesn't stay.
No, it can't.
You can get yourself happy for a little bit. And
well,
then, you know,
could you call that desire, the desire to bring it up to the idealized? I mean, I'm just going throwing some.
Well, sure. I mean, well, yes. The word desire could be used to imply, right, that. But desire is also magical. There's all kinds of nuanced elements to what we refer to as desire, which are not so easy to define by other words. Right?
Maybe like a little more root of that is accountability. Like you actually have some, there's like hurt, like some kind of something here that has accountability and can, like, you know what I mean, do stuff, like
yes.
Hold yourself accountable for
anything. Well, it's all part of the myth.
Yeah.
Right? Accountability also suggests that you are of the nature of a self-deterministic, disparate creature that could and should self-impose idealized moral and other forms of behavior or qualities of spiritual or secular experience and then use those to contrast with what's actually happening and then, of course, fall back right into the gap. Now, all of this apparent structure, psychological, referential structure, is absolute myth. One way that, and it's absolute myth in a number of ways. I mean, you can
slice and dice.
You can slice and dice or pour solvent on it in a number of ways, right? One way is that you can get a sense of your present experience is an unbounded entirety, absolutely inclusive. Feel the inclusivity of your present experience. Your mind is an expert chef carver, right? The mind, think of it as the capacity of carving. So here's a slice, and here's a slice, and here's a slice, and here's a slice, or here's a cube, and here's a cut, right? So through language, through reference, through suffering the gap, which is a psychiatric fermentation, there's a carving up of the entirety or the inclusivity into packets, behavioral experiential packets. And then the assignment that, oh, I am experiencing, I am suffering, I have an unmet preference, I have prevailed, I've made an appointment to go on vacation, right? I've been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So this whole notion of an I, or taking the entirely inclusive, spontaneous, radiant expression of all experiencing, bringing it into an I, is just another symptom of the gap. And when we want to ameliorate suffering, we want to ameliorate suffering as the I. I want to feel better. I want to be more confident. I want to graduate XYZ program. I want to facilitate the work. I want to read an Osho book.
I want to get something.
I want to get something, or I want to get out of something.
Yeah. What's worse, which is still getting something, wanting to get something.
I want this, but I know I'm not supposed to, it's all a myth.
Well, this I has, there's no limit on how many iterations of that it can do. Right? It's incredible. Yeah, faster than it takes to eat chorizo.
I mean, isn't it inevitable? I mean, kind of arbitrary word, but I mean, here we are, this seeming focal point with this mind body to personalize it.
Well, it's, you know, it's funny to justify or divinize it by saying X is the consequence of Y. You don't know what this is. See, that's one way it keeps its charade going, like Suzanne's example. Right? Well, now that I've seen a little differently than I used to see, but I'm still the same old dumb fuck poser I've always been, I'm not suffering less, I'm suffering more, because now I have a whole new... Now I have a whole new set of things I can punish myself with. Yeah, I'm down. Yeah. I can't wait to, you know, believe in a bunch more shit that I can punish myself with because I'm not doing it.
Even in that little simple equation of X plus Y equals Z, you're like, oh, okay, X plus Y doesn't equal Z. Got it. And then it's like, wait, X isn't X, Y isn't Y, plus isn't plus, equals isn't equals. I mean, it could break down that for a century.
What would this feel like? Whatever is presently available to be felt, without assignment, without classification, without thinking that you're even in a position to assess your current condition and then come up with a remedy or a celebration for it.
See, when I think of that in I don't know what I would call a normal way, I think of that as sort of a meditation or as a peaceful point of your day or something like that. But then you go out into the world and it's a samurai sword, you know, and then all of a sudden all of that becomes challenged because you're drawn into things. There's decision made or whatever. There's a path to be taken. There's work to be done. So it's one thing for that to pervade in certain points of the day. But then there's other points where you're in a reactive mode.
Well, what this is not dependent on the day.
It's an underlying.
Or even being in a so-called reactive or participatory mode with the dynamics of the unfolding of, right? Your life is a biologic scurrier.
Yeah, scurry.
Yeah. Scurry on, dude. But we're not looking at coming to agreement when you're sanguine and then failing the agreement when you're busy.
Yeah.
Sanguine means what?
Chilled out.
Yes.
You see, so this is not dependent.
Behavior.
Yeah, this is not dependent upon your enjoying the quietude of your meditation nook or, you know, flipping the bird at someone that cuts you off.
Or a gang of police.
Because, again, it's not about the quality of your experience. That's interesting. You see, because the natural inhabitation that we occupy is, what's the quality of my experience right now? As if that matters.
It's
seems to matter whether we're in a good spot or a bad spot, like mentally, not even physically.
I get it. But as long as the quality of your experience seems to matter, you're dwelling in the gap.
And how do you not have it matter?
Well, it's not a matter of how does one not have it matter. It's more a matter of the one to whom it should or would or would not matter is myth. The anthropomorphization as self here is what is at the foundation of all that appears in the gap. So you can't point to Sanguine on the cushion or flipping out in traffic, because neither one of those, quote, matter, or that's not the focus of your attention, of your present experience. You might characterize it, and this is, you know, glibly referred to throughout all yogic literature, right? That there's, I hate this Advaita shit, but there's no one here to whom it could or should matter.
I mean, that seems to me that this focus on I am, is a developmental task. It's just something you do until you say, what a load of crap.
It's all a load of crap living in the gap.
But it was like the adamant. This
mean,
is what you do. You
No.
You just say to yourself.
Well, this is how Buddhism and Hinduism and Advaitaism, Neo or otherwise, all fail. Even Patanjaliism or Kashmiri Shaivism. Because you'll find prideful practitioners, even in the most sublime freedom teaching, you'll find prideful practitioners in the yoga of radiant presence.
They know something about something, anything.
I'd like to see who's going to do the last rites.
Put it down. Please send somebody in.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, probably someone from the laundry room. Yeah, really. Right. Jesus from the laundry room.
Yeah, let's mess.
You're going to fucking die.
Let's mess with the statisticians or whatever, whoever.
You want to give your eyes to science?
We'll all do Kashmir Shavas and see what happens. They'll say, what? Where'd this come from?
Same shaman from hell. Go find somebody.
I had cashmere shaman.
Not just shy
for God's sake.
This guy's a shyvist.
Just give you some cashmere blanket.
Not chiropodist.
Cashmere. Do you remember Seinfeld?
Acrylic shyvist.
Do you remember this? He was wearing cashmere. I knew I had to have cashmere.
So, you see, we would like to persist in the gap, but not suffer from the gap. Because we want to know how I can remain cogent, call it human, but not suffer. And you can't.
You know, this sounds really...
We'll try really hard.
This sounds really crazy. But in England, when the tube system, they would always have the announcement, maybe you've all experienced that, I don't know, where they say, watch the gap, mind the gap, that's what they say, mind the gap, because there was a gap between the train and the platform, you know, and they would tell teachers, mind the gap. And I would just love that. Maybe it's because there are these roots of minding the gap. But it always just is like, man, that just seems so heavy, mind the gap.
If you take yourself on the road, meaning you're you've excavated from the entirety a disparate creature or self, and now you're taking it on the road, means you're extending yourself in space-time to a future that had better turn out the way that you like.
Yeah. It means you're screwed.
That's the gap.
Sooner or later, you're screwed.
That's right. And so
there has to be a pass if there's a person instantaneously.
Yes. And so within the incredible mythic structures of a disparate self, we want a remedy for all of the frustration, a remedy for all of the apprehension. We don't yet see that the real remedy is no remedy at all, which is the collapse at present, not in your future, but right here. That what? I mean, some ways it's spoken of is there is no self. But that doesn't make any sense if you're really, you know, strongly or affectionately identified with your body, your mind, your stuff, and your calendar. It doesn't make any sense to say there's no self, because there's self. So you have to, you know, be a little clever with it. Right?
You know,
we have to mislead.
I mean, I realize that here I go into history. But waking up this morning, this idea, this notion of non-duality.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like I there was a certain appreciation of non-duality and duality. Duality being what I think I experience oftentimes of time and history and space and material objects and
yes.
everything else. And non-duality is that.
Exactly the same.
Is not that. I mean, but they're woven together in such a way that it's like you don't know if one is the expression of the other. And whether you call it a dream or whether you call it a formation into something hard and real, who knows? But there is this absolute non-duality and this duality. But that phrase, there is no non-duality and duality. It's interesting. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it was just this notion of these twisted pair of cables running together.
Well, all of recordable consciousness is twisted pairs. Otherwise, what do you say about present experience? If you're just feeling yourself...
Yeah, you can't... Yeah, it has to be a reference in a way.
Yes, if you're just feeling yourself, you ain't got nothing to say. Doesn't mean you must shut up or put a sign around your neck that says I'm Mauna, like some frivolous yogis do.
It seems like just chilling and feeling yourself, like just chilling and being, when the duality comes in and the gap shows up, it seems louder than when you're cruising along, busy and distracted.
When you're habituated to your own neurosis, the volume is not that high. When you turn the corner and see that it's possible not to be habituated to your own neurosis, then the symptoms of that neurosis can appear louder, sharper, because your suspicion has matured. You know that you're not true.
It stands out more.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why you drink barium for your GI series. It stands out more.
That contrast is important.
Huh. Now, what's very strange, behaviorally speaking, is that without having to work on the gnarly nature of our neurotic symptoms, which is fine, working on the gnarly nature of neurotic symptoms is swell. Does sound good.
Alliteration.
But as you feel yourself, as you become, let's say, wakeful, to your undifferentiated nature, then it curiously has a remedial effect on the former, the gnarly nature of your neurotic symptoms. Because your expansivity is a, call it a movement of intelligence.
Your what?
Expansivity, your diffuse nature, feeling your diffuse nature is a movement of intelligence. And by intelligence, we're not referring to knowledge or cleverness or scientific or mathematical tautologies. But even a few, let's say, moments here and there of resting in yourself without plans, without measure, without justification, is emphatically healing.
And that stuff takes care of itself anyway. You don't even have to attend to it.
That could very well be true. It's worth finding out.
I do think some of these yogis, whatever, people maybe have experienced moments or periods of time of this and try to, like, categorize it, you know, to help people feel that.
Yes, of course.
Not because they had any designs on, there may be a few people, I mean, not because they necessarily had any designs on anything.
Well, Muktananda and Chidvilasananda and that cult, you know, created these intensives, which were ways of trying to codify and jam Kashmiri Shaivism down your throat. And hopefully you would have a cathartic, if not kundalini awakening, as a consequence of it, so that someone would have to put a spoon where you wouldn't bite on your tongue. You know, you see, the cult of the kundalini awakening, I mean, Gabriel Cousins is a, you know, child of that cult, and Fritz Smith, people that I've studied with, hung out with, is a child of that cult. Right? The cult of the kundalini awakening, getting hit by a peacock feather and having a petite mal seizure and seeing Muktananda's guru in Nityananda in total splendor. But that was just a, you know, bastardization that Muktananda brought to the West. For what purpose, I don't really know. Because that whole cult is, you know, not so easy to find anymore. It certainly doesn't rake in the amount of money it did a decade ago. Just like Osho is, you know, who gives money to Osho? You know what I mean? See, once the loyalty dries up, once the cathartic, right, experience dries up, well, you look someplace else to spend your money. I mean, the church is doing well. Right? Oh, maybe, you know, maybe participation is a little down after that petty annoyance of all of that, you know, regrettable pedophilia.
I think it's a lot of Americans keeping it low.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
maybe there's something to say about that and why the Pope is who the Pope is.
Yeah.
Right? If you're an institution and you know where your bread is buttered, well, you're going to make sure that the figurehead, right, is a friend of the principal donators. You know, you start building hospitals in India, you know there's going to be illegal organ harvesting.
Oh, God.
You know. Yeah, we're going to have to remove that kidney. It's so inflamed. You know, you get $3,000 for that kidney, maybe $8,000 for that kidney. I don't know.
Just as long as you don't make that temple basic.
Dialysis machine.
Yeah, and it says call the hospital. You know, it's like everything.
Oh, yeah, that's, I heard that too.
It's still pretty powerful.
To be honest, that's why I'm scared to go to some of these countries. I'm scared if I got a step.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not true. It's like that basically.
I don't know, but it's a good story. It's a juicy story.
Fear drives us all. I mean, it's fear. Everything at the bottom of everything seems to be fear.
And if we can't find it in reality, we'll make it up.
You know, it's not a bad diagnosis, but it's a false diagnosis.
Dr. Lisa's!
Yeah.
Why do you say it's a false?
Well, because fear is magic.
Why?
And multifaceted.
Fear
by simply reducing one's discordant lamentation with the beauty of living and hold fear accountable is too simple. What is fear?
An emotion. An emotion?
What's an emotion?
A feeling?
You see, we end up, not you, but any of us, we'll simply end up in a circle of reference. Fear is magic. Life is magic. Suffering is magic. The release from suffering is magic. And that magic is an inclusivity. And not one thing can be held accountable or responsible for any other thing. So to blame our discordant, right, lamentation on fear is the myth of accountability. It's a genesis. It's a myth of a genesis. And there is no such thing.
Trying to explain it via that, and there is no explanation.
That's detail. The regular stuff, and maybe a little jam.
You see, once you hold,
maybe a little more.
Once you hold your idea as being the consequence of some other idea as the accountable origin, you're in the gap. You're just painting hysteria on the walls like a Pollock.
Fish paints hysteria on the walls?
Yeah.
Yes, the artist.
Just leaving about two-thirds, no more than that. Because I'll just drink it.
But don't you think it's just like maybe we all want to kind of fit in somewhere?
Yeah, but again, who, what, where, why, how, when is this who that wants to fit into what, Horton?
What did you say? Who asked for it?
Horton. Horton hears a who.
Horton hears a who.
Come on.
This is like a really good solution.
I know, it's like...
Yeah, it is. And you pass the thing.
Again, I don't want to get all, you know...
Dr. Seuss on us.
I don't want to get all Dr. Seuss or those horrible neo-Advaita motherfuckers that...
Oh,
I hate those people that are happy to be like all clever about, you know, who's suffering, who wants to know, you know. It's like a Ramesh Balsekar disease.
Yes.
Really, it's terrible.
I engage in a lot of times.
Yeah.
Then they go on and on about, just recently I keep hearing all these people that are so confident that humans are the only animals that do this sort of thing. I'm like, who the fuck, how do you come up with this shit? How can you say that?
We're the only ones who engage in the only one.
That engage in, like, psychosis. Like, all other animals are just blissfully doing whatever it is they do. And, like, you know, there's no neurotic bugs or dogs or...
Well, those that hang with humans, there are.
There's neurotic animals.
It's like, what are you talking about?
So when we look for... let's just call it the genesis story of why you appear to be suffering... Fear is not the answer. Love's not the answer either. War is not the answer either.
Sex?
Sex can be, from time to time, an answer.
Why you're suffering. You are quite the comedian today.
It's like the aftermath of my James Bond regrouping.
You're back. You're good. I'm back. Take that. I'm back. Take that. Really.
I put myself back together once again.
Too funny.
I dumped it.
And I'm ready for action.
You see, the moment you want to hold some factor accountable for some other factor, you're just dreaming. You're making yourself up on the spot.
Fear is a
as the consequence.
The future.
Yes. Fear is also a presently appearing regret of the past. Fear could also be a spontaneous proliferation occurring in the present without even any trigger. Right here, if there were such a place, right now, if there were such a time, and there's not, but were there a place and a time that you could review the miraculous and liquid nature of your own experience, you would be hard-pressed to find a consequence, or a genesis, or a result of, or a source, or a building block, or an author. And as you play around with that textural discovery, it's not a mental discovery, because mental is all referential. The discovery has to be what we refer to as textural or feeling. Because textural and feeling knows itself in a non-dual manner. Texture and feeling doesn't suffer from delay or gap or explanation.
It's not the story, it's the present. It's the,
yes.
It's the what's for lunch.
Yeah, that's why, you know, the word presence can come in handy. Not as an object, which is how the Tolles, the Eckerts, fetishize it. Right? Not
seems
as
like words
an object.
That get used so much start to form into its own...
They crystallize.
Yeah, they right. That's
yeah.
Sort of more to set
and that's right. So, but that's why we're emphasizing that your present feeling nature, textural, not sentimental, is alive. It's not stagnant. It's not an object. It's not a subject. The revelation of feeling tone is itself, therefore, the suggestion that it's non-dual.
Yeah.
And it doesn't suffer from fear. Content suffers from fear. Identification and association, the gap suffers from fear. But the but or and the irrefutable texture of presence does not suffer from fear or consequence. It's non-defensive.
Doesn't have a hierarchy on that fear is worse or better than any other experience?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't play the hierarchy game. It doesn't manufacture gap nor suffer from the hallucinatory manufacture of gap.
And that's the free that we're looking for.
That's the free that you are.
But to pay the price for it means to drop the... We want that free, but we want it as an I want it.
Well, yeah, as soon as I want the free, then it's fetishized. It's an accoutrement. You're in the gap. Because now it's become a formulation. And you've also, not deliberately or not by any hand of your own, created time. Right? If I want to be free, bam, time.
Yeah, it means instantaneously you are not free right now.
Yes. That's the implication. You see, that's the creation of the gap. Right? Any and all psychologic reference or representation that can be felt as I, and then accoutrements of I, is the gap, is absolute fallacy. And we want that fallacy to become idealized. But the fallacy of you will never become idealized. Because we hate ourselves too much. Tongue in cheek. Because it's false. You see? Because it's false. You on the lookout for better is false. And so you'll never arrive at you having arrived or accomplished better. So you see, it's not the circumstances and events that we want to be liquidated from. It's the present moment hallucinatory hypnotic suggestion of time, of being in time. That's what you want to be free from. Not any consequence of it. Because there's no point in wanting to pick apart the consequences of the hallucination of psychological time and say, I want to be free from this, 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 and this, but that's good. Keep that one coming, 86 on the chorizo. You see, then you're selective, right? Now, the moment you're selective, are you inclusive? No, you're not inclusive. You're not diffuse. The moment you're selective, you're myopic, right? You're uber-focused again.
The selectiveness comes from a sense of the little I that wants
They're the same.
Something.
They're the same. See,
try to get
it's, it. This is not happening. It's happening, but it's not really happening. You see, this is an atemporal singularity. It's not consequential. What it's doing right now, it does right now. What it's doing right now, it's not because it Big Bang 14 billion years ago. What it's doing right now, it's doing right now. Right? It's not that this many iterations or time of time had to occur for a dark universe, a dark void universe, to say, I am, Big Bang itself into proliferation, spin and cool. And so you could have a complex, right, biologic organism on the surface of the planet having breakfast. No. If this is doing anything, what it's doing it now. This is not the consequence of any kind of genesis, geological or otherwise.
It's not the consequence of getting out of that system.
No. Really? So if there's suffering, then why shouldn't there be? That suffering is only has purchase if there's time. And what we call the accompanying psychiatric resistance, that whatever this is or isn't, or however I'm feeling it or not, should be different. That's the gap. Now, I don't know why, let's say, perspectives like these, as pretty simple as they are, needs to turn into a municipality in Oregon. or should be held accountable for the purchase of 12 Rolls Royces. What was that about?
What was he doing?
Well, it's curious. You see, you know, when you have a cathartic being like an Osho or a Byron Katie or a whomever, right? Why do we have to create a citadel and a moat?
It's just what they seem to do.
What the fuck? This is really simple. You can have a ganache and get down with this.
I mean, are we going to find out that the Dalai Lama is like
right.
Drug cartel?
Well, he is. And the drug is Buddhism.
I just got a calendar. Dalai Lama calendar is one that a friend of ours always gives them. So I turned around, and when she left, I gave it to Justin. I knew Justin would appreciate it.
Get this out of my house!
It's like, I can't read another one of these.
I know.
Made up.
Jacob Vladimir Putin.
I love him, but, you know, enough.
If anyone's just got to have a statue, we're 50% off at Two Buttons this week.
Well, let's go to Two Buttons. Road trip.
To where?
Two Buttons. Have you been?
Yeah, like,
what is
the Two Buttons? There,
everything's 50% off.
Everything's
store. 50% off.
Two Buttons is a store.
They're trying to unload inventory, yeah? Because they're collectors. They're crazy.
We've never been there.
Yeah.
We went up.
It's the end of the year. It's tax time. Unload everything.
You know the woman who wrote the book, Frank Love, supposedly
you should know that better.
One of the owners.
I'm not up with it. But I hear you. Yeah.
It's right up the road.
I don't actually pay any attention to what I do.
Not really. I don't pay attention to what I do. I should do something about what I do. I don't think so. How free do you feel like being today? I mean, do you want shit to go your way? Is that the level of free you're in for? You want shit to go your way?
It's like some green lights on the lamp.
Yeah, okay. Fine. That's why they sell the secret. Get some green lights.
How free do you want to be? That's a good question.
How free do you want to be today? Marginally free? Cooperatively free? Dependently free? circumstance and event free? How about being free from the myth of experience itself?
Seems like experience is still here, no matter what.
But it doesn't have to impose itself on you.
So you can recognize it without...
Yes, when you look really subtly. I mean, we're going right down to the molecule, which is on the head of the head of the pin of the pin of the sharp of the needle of the point of the nothing, right? So, yes, yeah, so, okay, experiencing it seems to be kind of kicking around, you know? It has a good beat. You can dance to it. I'll give it a 7. Dick Clark's reality. We'll call it Dick Clark's reality. Yeah, but it doesn't mean it has to bother you.
Doesn't mean you even have to show up to notice.
That's what we're playing around with. You see, the you that is bothered by the inexorable, ineffable, irrefutable presence of experiencing of whatever, WTF, the great improvisational WTF. What does that have to do with you? See, when Sri Ranjit said, don't touch it, what he meant was, don't touch it.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that.
Don't become a product of this. Right? Don't imbue the miracle of this as you being consequential to this.
Well, as soon as we react to it, we're just part of it. We're just part of that.
Deeper. Look deeper. Because that's right, that's yes, but that's superficial, you know, that's something you could say in the human realm of we and react and as soon as, but there is no we, there is no react, there is no as soon as. There's just this. This is not an as soon as, is it?
No.
No.
No, it's not.
And so look to the seed, the beach, the Hindus might say, of where identification occurs. Where, when identification occurs. Which means now you've become imbued with or a product of experiencing. Now it matters to you how experiencing goes down. How free do you want to be today? Do you want the myth of experiencing to go your way? Or might it be possible, if not even apprehensible, that experiencing just doesn't bother you, no matter what it does? No matter what it does. No matter what it does. Now you're absolutely released, and we might be talking extravagantly, from that this is even so, or that it appears to you in a way that's somehow pleasing. How free do you want to be? Maybe there's a free that you didn't even realize you were capable of. And so when you thought you wanted to be free, you were shortchanging yourself. Well, fuck you. Fuck you and your limited expectations of what you're actually capable of, you dumb fuck poser. I mean, to me, that's a compliment.
That is a good quote.
Right? You see, the moment you lift a finger to defend yourself, right, to qualify how you feel and think about things or how someone else feels and thinks about things, right, you're like you've put your foot in the gap. Now you're living in the gap.
Reading glasses.
And you're sucked underneath the tree.
You've got a strap on. Can you deal with the strap?
Don't touch it. It's so. But it's not about you.
It seems like all the mental constructs that just automatically come up, they're all about me. Everyone of them. They're just, they seem to always be about me. And there's been some modicum of success of just not touching that.
Yes. Well, again, that's a sweeter spot than being on the receiving end of being pushed around by every affliction that's out there. So I'm just suggesting another sweet spot. Let's say there's a man who has suffered from frivolous ideas. And then we'll change the name. Then there's a Dave, right, who sits quietly on the couch, who no longer suffers from the appearance of frivolous ideas. Then there's the empty couch. No suffering, no not suffering.
No body on the couch.
Just this. You see how easy it is for us to anthropomorphize free as an accoutrement, as a condition, as an accomplishment, call it a spiritual accomplishment, that things that used to bother and afflict me don't anymore. Well, hallelujah. I mean, go give a workshop, make a lot of money, take us out to lunch once in a while. Right? Go buy some Rolls Royces, have a giant internet community. Everyone can facilitate everyone else until the cows come home and nobody wakes up.
Or hawk yourself on PBS.
Then hawk yourself on PBS, right? Yep.
For $30 a year, you get the Synchro Destiny.
Synchro Destiny. Synchronous Destiny recording.
Is that a trademark thing?
You came up with just crack the fuck up laughing. You're like, so
fun. Yeah. What an asshole.
What a hoot.
Wayne Dyer is still paid by PBS. Yeah. He's all in it. Oh, for $30 more.
You're going like, to witness.
Oh, good.
$30 more.
I don't know how they get away with it. I don't know why they do it.
Because they can.
Yeah. They're driven, right? It's their own karmic. It's their own karmic satisfaction. Yeah.
$20. I'll personally sign it.
Yeah.
With my rubber stamp.
Ken Wilber and Andrew Cohen and Samuel Bonder and Daffrey John.
It's a fad.
Like, I don't know anybody. If we walk out the street, people might know Buddhism.
I was sitting at work not that long ago and said something about the chakras, and there was somebody probably your age, maybe a little younger. That's a chakra. They'd never heard of chakras.
Yeah, like if I asked,
no clue.
You think it's everywhere.
Well, all my friends
do. 99.9%. Right?
No? You gotta be kidding me.
That's
true.
Well,
celebrities.
It has sort of hit the mainstream.
You know what I mean?
You know?
Because I just saw something I did on TV on the other day, and Deepak was on a cooking show or something. And they're like, thanks for joining us. You're going to spice up our show today. It's just celebrityism. I'm like, what is he doing?
Anderson Cooper is getting into awareness, mindfulness. meditation. So
who's that?
Anderson Cooper on Snow. Yeah. So he just went to, he spoke with, you know, what's the yeah, Zen. So he did a show on that. Now he meditates.
And then what's that?
And now he meditates, so
yeah.
More will meditate.
Yeah.
They're probably just going, thing. Dude, we're losing subscriptions. All these yoga fuckers aren't really watching TV. We got to get Deepak,
yeah.
And Wayne Dyer up here soon.
Yeah, that's probably not far off, yeah. That's not bad, man.
We got to get them interested.
Yeah. That's not hard. Numbers.
We got to cater to our...
60 minutes.
TM, no, I'm sure they've done stuff on TM. Yeah. TM was a huge deal when it hit. No doubt. Especially with somebody as charismatic as the Maharishi. Maybe it's you.
No, I didn't used to say quotes.
You're tangling with symptoms, you're too late. It's too late. Resolving symptoms, it's too late. It's never ending. Because the proliferation of identification and symptoms as association, you're already deep in it.
But can't they just as easily throw you out of, you know, symptoms? Just the sudden awareness of symptoms in the totality has the possibility of as much as anything else.
Well, this always is itself, whether it's throwing you in or out or under.
But symptom four, symptom relatively free, you know, it's just as likely, it seems, to throw you out of samsara. Not that you're thrown out of samsara, but you find yourself, possibly, not really messing with the symptoms anymore. Yet, symptoms may have had some part to play in your diminishment.
No, because the revelation is present. What you see and feel, whether enlightened or something less than or more than, is never the consequence of anything that occurred prior to it. Because this is always what it is.
Well, maybe this is a question. Maybe the person from the concentration camp that seemed to be able to rise above it and be, I could never say the word equanimous, that word.
Equanimous.
Equanimous. It's just as likely as not to have been that way no matter what the situation.
Well,
who's to say?
Yeah, and you start moving into hypothetical notions of anything other than what's present.
But sometimes it sure appears that sometimes an extreme situation can cause an outcome. If you want to call it an outcome. Can it provide an opening, let's say.
Well, are you an archaeologist? Are you
not
an anthropologist, a sociologist? Right.
Amateur. gynecologist.
Amateur gynecologist. That's right. That's how I meet people at bars. What do you do for a living?
Pedal parties.
Amateur gynecologist.
Who likes to cuddle?
Likes to.
You've never been to one date, have you?
You have a certain vitality, right? That certain vitality is this
just for you, honey.
Presence. Now you can take this vitality on the road and create hypothetical adventures and consequences about things that happened in the so-called past or the history of humankind. You can apply your vitality, right, to abstraction. You can also apply your vitality to look in or back or presently at the appearance of its own genesis. About anything. You don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to unlock anything. You don't have to get to the end of your suffering. You really don't. You don't have to get to the end of your suffering.
Just that in itself is like the antithesis of the like American or human dream, you know. That's
the Buddhist dream
thing. Sure. Everybody's selling you can get to the end of yourself.
It just looks like the people that, you know, have it aren't suffering so.
Have what? Gotten to the end of their suffering?
But I guess if you're motivated to go after that as an object,
yeah,
well, the whole thing falls apart, right? You know, because it's just like any other object that you go after.
It's just another drug or addiction sort of thing.
There's no need to be a beggar.
A what?
A beggar. In supplicating or reaching out to something other than yourself, pre-existent to yourself, dwelling in a higher realm than yourself, to give you a break. That's a beggar. Right? That's God creationism. If it is, if it can be seen or felt, imagined or otherwise, as a presently appearing inclusivity, not as a consequence, not as a gift or an implicate order from a higher creationist power, yeah, then... Yeah. then the impact is that one stops praying. Yeah. To something, someone that's not already what this is.
Both P-R-E-Y and P-R-A-Y.
That's right, because it is both. Deepak Chopra prays as much as he prays.
Yes. It does seem to be, too.
It's parasitic. It's all parasitic. Osho is parasitic. Byron Katie is parasitic. Thich Nhat Hanh is parasitic. Vladimir Putin is parasitic. Monsanto is parasitic. Not singling them out from anything, really, because the nature of this, right? At least as primates, linking arms and singing kumbaya is parasitic. I mean, it's based on hallucination. Novel loyalty systems called belief, identification.
Realms.
Realms upon realms, bardos upon bardos. And you assign one, even the most innocuous, you're in the gap. Yes, it is exactly like that. It's an instantaneous proliferation of all things from no thing at all.
It's just hard to sort of account for the paradoxes.
Of what? Paradoxes of what? Contradictions of what? I mean, they're only paradoxical or contradictory if you have a belief. But this, here we are, needn't have a belief. And so anything that appears in it, as it, to itself, can be the most mind-blowing paradox and contradiction, and also not at all. Yes, because there's no base. If there's no baseline, where's the paradox?
It's all about the base.
That's what I thought.
It's all about the base.
Absolutely about the base. Not the treble.
That's right.
No treble.
That's what you get for having a conversation like this in public. I know. Me too, actually.
In public with Pat's marketing.
I'm actually like surprised that someone actually said something, because usually people just walk by all kind of like, oh my God, what the hell is
sometimes
going on
there? I think
just keep walking, don't look.
It would be neat to have a sign that says, sit down. Join us.
That would be very Truman Show, people who walk by.
Stewart's the only fellowship after an early
staged
meeting.
They put up a sign. Sit down, donations accepted. See how much money shows up. Yeah.
He's starting a movement.
It's like Byron Katie, it's like everything else. The human populace wasn't susceptible to looking for those types of things. They wouldn't be spending the money to follow all these things they can't get on their own.
Yeah, this is susceptibility. It's a crime of susceptibility.
If you build it, they will come.
It's like a friend of ours just moved out to Ojai.
Ojai?
Yeah, and it's like, why did they move there?
Well, John Sherman?
Byron Katie.
Oh, yes.
And they wanted to be near that community. Why do people go to Asheville, North Carolina? Because there's a certain community fix that's there.
Yeah.
Okay. You know,
Doylestown.
Oh, crap. Where were we up in Arizona?
Sedona.
You know, I mean, there's definitely something there. I don't disagree with that. There's something there. I'll agree.
Yep.
Beautiful place, but there is something there. There's a vortex, I don't care what you call it, there's something.
Right.
But people are drawn. People say, hey, this is where you got to go, they go. You know, movie stars, whatever, they all follow. Same with people are saying that Byron Katie or whoever else is the person to follow today. Okay, Zoom.
Yeah.
They'd be stupid not to take the money. people are giving it to them. If that's what they're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. I mean, it's all serendipitous, right?
Sometimes it seems that way, sometimes it doesn't.
Yes, that's right.
Take these back, I'll forget them.
I'll just take them.
You're such a fashion plate, she wanted them.
I know. She recognizes good.
Yeah, exactly. She just said, I just want to look like this all day long. This is the new look I'm going for.
There's no place to get to and nothing to do. Isn't a real popular message?
Isn't what?
It isn't a message that speaks to most people.
Well, right. Sure. I agree with that. Right?
I think Captain Will Kirk was the most brave, right? When he went to the Star Trek convention and yelled at everyone to go get a life.
Oh, yeah.
He did that?
Oh, God.
Oh, that's right. That was on SNL.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Would you people get a life?
That was hilarious, wasn't it?
I mean, the Dalai Lama would be wise, right, to say, look, enough.
Hey, look at Krishnamurti. Wow.
Well, you know, at Krishnamurti's inception point, he told everyone to go get a life, right? And then he spent, you know, 60 years or more of
blathering
his life
on.
Blathering on and on, encouraging people to stop meditating. Right? He made a fetish out of himself. He did. He made a fetish and a teaching out of himself. And then all of these, you know, Krishnamurtiites around Ojai and elsewhere.
Where is Ojai?
Ojai is east of Ventura. Ventura's California is above Santa Barbara on the coast, and Ojai is toward the hills.
Lots of good weather areas.
Orange groves.
Yeah, big orange grove area.
So you go to this Krishnamurti conference, and everyone is like, you know, giving you the garlic and the cross when it comes to meditating. Well, that's not what Krishnamurti was trying to teach you. They're like, oh, meditation is bad. I'm like, oh my God. So he had no choice. He was very, very articulate in pointing out how everyone else had made a fetish of their own, right, religious idolatries. And he had become the same thing. Not by a fault of his own, but that's just the way that
you can't,
the serendipity of the crime of being influenced plays out.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's
that's how it plays out. That's what
like
we do.
Like the same way as if I just say a word right now and somebody jumps on it and the whole conversation shifts. It's like, oh, oops, that would.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Right? I mean, it's funny to watch the entire consciousness, like, you know that little thing where you pour pepper in a soap dish and put in pepper in some water and put in a bar of soap? As the film from the soap hits the pepper, it's like an electromagnetic thing, and all the pepper goes woof instantaneously.
Huh.
Woof instantaneously. It's bizarre. It's a fun little chemistry experiment.
Wow. You put pepper in soup?
Pour pepper.
On top of water.
On water in a dish, and then just put in a bar of soap toward the end.
Or a drop of.
And as it grabs, as the soap, right, osmositizes, whatever you want to say, into the water, the pepper just goes whoop. All at once.
Away from the soap?
Yeah.
We're out of here.
And not just like, let's mosey away. Like, it's really bizarre.
Like, harness that for energy.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Pepper and soap. Why not? Turn turbines.
Yeah.
This whole locomotive is powered by this little dish of pepper.
The pepper appears to be afraid of the soap, and that doesn't.
going into warp speed. Get the pepper ready.
This is, right? This is, but see, as you pointed out, you say a word and a little gesture, and that's how we communicate with each other. We all do that. We're all like pepper and soap. Squirrel!
Run! But that's the great seeing that, seeing how insane that is, and how it's definitely not X plus Y equals Z. There is no fucking... I can do that. Yeah. And you can't, like, hold your... To be like, oh, God, I shouldn't have said pepper. My God, I hate myself.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you know?
It's going to be something.
But that's what we do. We're like, God, I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I said pepper at breakfast. I'm not going to get over this for the whole day. And I'm never going to say pepper again.
Pepper mind.
This is strangely playful. This, call it consciousness, it doesn't have to be called that, appearing in your experience, accompanied by association and identification as you, as I mean mine, can be remarkably, let's say, forgetful of the geometry of its own bizarre function. But it also has the remarkable capacity to be very adroitly observing of its own behavior. So the average suffering muggle is enjoying this, paying no attention to itself whatsoever. Self-obscured. Consciousness has the capacity of self-obscuration, though that's all that there is. And it also possesses, call it the intelligence or the miraculous sensitivity, to be very finely observant of its own nature.
And I want to tell the story that I can work on it and get more observant or do whatever. I don't even think that's possible.
But you have become more observant.
It has happened.
It has happened.
I don't think it's by my own merit or practice.
Yes,
or
that's
attention.
Right. Yeah, you don't have to claim, you know, ownership of that it has occurred in your experience. Yeah. Because everything that you've done, and as many things as you've not done, have contributed to an organic adventure of this self-obscuring beatitude to pass through its own fog. It's all about the base. And you could say maybe one reason it seems to take time. Is that early on in the urgency for something authentic, substantive, and revelatory, we're still suffering from the archival association of being human. So when I ask, how free do you want to be today, you're really only capable of imagining this free. Because we're still under the influence of the self-obscuring magic of consciousness. So it can only imagine itself to be, right, marginally free. It hasn't, let's say, matured enough in its view to get a feel for, oh, wait, hold on, this can be totally fucking free, right? Totally fucking free doesn't occur to us when in earlier stages of our lamentation we just are tired of the relationships and the money and the fear and the apprehension and the self-abnegation and, right? I mean, the psychiatric overwhelm is so bad that being free from it is like, what a giant relief. But that's marginally free. All the way free, we haven't even gotten a sufficient glimpse of yet, to see that it might actually be possible that as experiencing occurs in all of the mellifluous way that it does occur, that it could be, one could be free or imagine a freedom from the experiencing itself of all consequence, of all genesis, of all identification, of all association, of all anything. That freedom is not in our vocabulary early on, right, in the adventure that a yogi undertakes. Yes, can't be recognized because it's still so much, you know, enjoying at your expense self-obscuration. Right? If I'm suffering psychiatrically and blame and addiction and shame and regret and projection and enmeshment and codependence and the whole, you know, ball of hell that I know so well, right? Then I'm still suffering from this, the miraculous capacity of self-obscuration. And of course I want to be relieved of all of those symptoms because they suck. I suck. My experience sucks to be under the influence of all of these, right, symptoms. But as you travel a little further, and maybe there's some maturity or there's some sobriety and there's a self-sufficiency that occurs when I can look more deeply at the nature of present experiencing. I'm not just in the blame game and the release from the blame game or the codependency of thinking I have to serve everybody else to maintain my sobriety. Which is true for any of us, regardless of the addiction, recognized or not. Right? So once that habit of codependence, which is a symptom that cannot be decoupled from self-obscuration, codependency, pandemic of codependency, accompanies self-obscuration. You can't separate the two. But as the cloud, the fog of self-obscuration starts to lift, so does the codependency. In weird ways, in inexplicable ways, no matter how articulate you are, you won't be able to untie it because it's too weird. And as self-obscuration lifts even further, now your appreciation for what freedom could possibly look or feel like is you could never have imagined it last Thursday. I could never have imagined last Thursday that, oh my God, none of this has to be an imposition. Not the behavior, not the human, not the body, not space, not time, not anything you've ever thought or said about this. Even your present experience is non-afflictive. Though irrefutable, non-afflictive. Because it's not about you. Yeah, if you're into traveling lighter, fuck you, travel lighter.
Set it down. Leave the big suitcase behind.
I gotta go do some service.
I hear you.
Do some for me too, so I feel better about myself.
Right. Me too. I gotta go do some service.